Do a little politicking?
I'll press your impudent son bitch.
You don't tell your pappy how to cut the electorate. We ain't one at a time in here. We're mass communicating.
Oh, yes. That's a powerful new force.
Mm-hmm. Think of it, Junior.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back here to The Full Story on WYAB 103.9 on this Friday. Finally made it to Friday at the end of this week. Again, just these weeks just go by, seem like they're just going fast. One after the other when you have so much stuff going on in politics. There's always something, seems to be something new every single day. But today, the couple things I want to talk about is first the continuing resolution or a budget. So where are we as far as where that is right now? Is there going to be another government shutdown? It seems like it's the same thing. I mean, it's almost like we just reuse the story, right? Like I just go back a couple of months and just pull out the story that I wrote a couple months ago and just re-say the same thing. It just changed the parties almost, right? As we get yet to another budget showdown now with the Senate trying to work out some kind of deal with each other. Of course, there was a stopgap measure passed by the House that was sent over to the Senate. But Senate Democrats don't want to do certain things because they don't want to fund or defund, more like defund things that Trump wants to. So now, instead of passing an actual budget, they're going to do another continuing resolution or try to do another continuing resolution. There's been some argument on how long that will be, either it's April or September. But we need to stop putting this stuff off. It's about time we get a budget passed, an actual budget. Now, like anything, to get past the Senate filibuster, you need at least 60 votes. So that's kind of always the hang-up, is that you have to get a significant amount of Democrat votes to get it passed. What, I think eight or nine. I can't remember. I'll get to that. I don't have the story right in front of me. But we'll go through that, exactly where we are, what the senators are saying as they try to get ready for that. Of course, we also have the storm coming through today. That's not going to be a story that we cover, but something I want to mention at the top of the hour here. Pretty severe weather, it seems like. But I think there's some kind of, there's always like sensationalism, it seems, with the weather. Every storm is a huge storm nowadays, right? And the problem with that kind of weather sensationalism, and kind of the dramatization of weather, I would say, is, and people like Weather Channel are pretty bad about pushing this, is people get numb to it after a while, and they don't understand when we do have, if every storm is a storm of the century, then people are going to stop worrying about when the storm of the century does come. They shut down schools prematurely and then ends up being fizzled out. It's always important. Don't get me wrong, right? It's always important to stay safe and to be aware of things. But man, like I said, every single storm, it seems like, oh, it's the next big one. It's going to be the next big one. It's going to be catastrophic. It's like, let's calm down a little bit here. Okay. It's going to be a bad thunderstorm. All right. At the end of the day, that's what we need to know. Not every storm is the worst ever, but, like I said, things like the Weather Channel, these 24-hour things with the weather, right? At the end of the day, they have to get advertisements like any other station. They're not a not-for-profit organization, drama sells. Drama does sell. It keeps people focused in on the weather. So every single thing is the worst. Again, that's not to take away from the fact that we need to be aware of it, but we just need to take, in my opinion, right? This is an opinion show. In my opinion, we need to take down the sensationalism just a tad bit with all of these storms. But outside of the continuing resolution, we're going to talk about some more movements in where we are with Europe's military. There's been some interesting things as, again, as Trump is trying to maneuver things where there's been some shortfalls that have been identified with their military and where they're, where that's going. And again, I want also something that the AP has reported on, the Associated Press has reported on with Israel and Gaza, is that how the U.S. and Israel are looking to Africa to potentially resettle Palestinians from Gaza who have been displaced by the conflict there. And, you know, in an ideal world, right, you know, these Gazans can just return to their house. But sometimes it's just needed for the safety of everybody just to level a place, right, and start anew. And that's part of what happens in war. You know, resettlement, things like that happen in war, especially when you start the war, right, and then you lose the war that you started. Things may not go so well for you, especially if you're the one who continuously wants to support the people that did the invading and did the attack on innocent civilians. It may not just always be happy-go-lucky with you. So there's a few different stories that we want to try to get to this morning. As always, you can call in during the break, 601-879-0002, if you're up this early. But it seems like there's a decent amount of cars out this morning. I always seem, you know, it's very crazy. You know, it's an early drive, and I don't know about you guys, but I always seem to get behind one slow person on the, you know, two-lane road that I take to try to get to the station. And it's like, you know, early in the morning, you know, we're talking 5 a.m. It's like, why is this other car on this middle of the nowhere road? And why are they going 25 miles an hour on a 45? Right. And of course, it's a double yellow line. So it's like, how does that always happen? I don't know. Like, it's quite unique in that, I just always seem to find that one person, that, and of course, you know, they're in no hurry, right? It's out in the country. Where do they got to go? Literally, I was behind a truck today whose license plate said fishing. So, you know, he's going to go a nice 25 miles an hour. Because, you know, he's just getting to the lake. What is he going, right? He's gone fishing. He's got nowhere to be. It's early in the morning. He's going to go, you know, take his time. You know, some of us do have radio shows to get to. And the one thing about being a radio host is you can't be late. You know, that's the one job. Like, you know what? If you're late, everybody knows. You know, a lot of people know if you're late to this job. And because if you're not talking, it's dead air. Pretty dead giveaway, right? That you're not on time. And so it's always, but nonetheless, I always seem to find them. And that's why they always say you got to leave early. All right, we're going to take our first break right here. Like I said, if you want to call in during the break, number 601-879-0002. Also streaming on YouTube and Rumble, where you can leave comments there as well. But keep it tuned to the full story on WYAB 103.9. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back here to the full story on WYAB 103.9 as we get to our first story of the morning. And again, it's a story that It seems like we talk to we talk about every single time a CR, a continuing resolution seems to be up, and the Senate finds itself again in a very familiar situation, trying to work to avoid a partial government shutdown with just hours to spare as Democrats confront two options: one, allowing passage of a bill they believe gives Donald Trump vast discretion on spending decisions, are voting no and let a funding lapse ensure, and so essentially letting a government shutdown happen. Of course, in the past, the Democrats have been very good at positioning themselves when they've been in power to blame any government shutdown on Republicans, and the Republicans had to cave in every single time. So now the question is, now that these two things are up here, will the blame fall on Democrats if there's a partial government shutdown, or will they avert a partial government shutdown altogether and then be able to politically say, look, even when we are in the opposition party, we still are able to at least fund the government for a little while, unlike the Republicans. So to me, that's kind of the political outlook that the Democrats are looking at from a strategic point. However, Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer gave members of his caucus days to vent their frustration about their options before them. But yesterday, late yesterday, made it clear he will not allow a government shutdown. His move gives Democrats room to side with Republicans and allow the continuing resolution to come up for a vote as soon as today. A procedural vote this morning will provide a first test of whether the package has the 60 votes needed to advance ahead of final voting, likely later in the day. At least 8 Democrats will need to join with Republicans to move the funding package forward. So they go 8. I said 9 earlier. I meant 8. Schumer said, quote, "While the CR is very bad, the potential for a shutdown has consequences for America that are much, much worse." And so the question is, will the Democrats get in line with their minority leader? With, like I said, Chuck Schumer getting behind the CR, at least to avoid a government shutdown. And Schumer told Democrats privately during a spirited closed-door lunch and then made multiple public remarks ahead of voting, which is supposed to happen today. The New York senator said, as bad as the GOP is, a shutdown would be giving worse, giving President Donald Trump and billionaire Elon Musk carte blanche as they tear through the government. He said, Trump has taken a blowtorch to our country and wielded chaos like a weapon. For Donald Trump, a shutdown would be a gift. It would be the best distraction he could ask for from his awful agenda. He is taking a blowtorch. I give Chuck Schumer that. He is taking a blowtorch to the federal government. He's taking the chain. Remember, I think we had the picture of Elon Musk with the chainsaw. They are taking that. That is no doubt about it. And without money, I mean, that's kind of the thing, though, is what Chuck Schumer's saying, and he's not wrong in this regard. In that, if they have a government shutdown and no funding, well, heck, that's exactly what Donald Trump wants, right? It's been this whole forced, you're going to try to force me to spend money. Well, if you don't have a budget, I don't spend crap, right? And that would probably work to Trump's benefit and give him that opportunity to be able to shut down complete departments and continue with the slash and burn that he's doing with the federal government. So Congress has been unable to pass the annual appropriation bill designed to fund the government, so they've resorted to passing short-term extensions ahead. That's what a continuing resolution is. They just always fail to pass a budget because they can't get the 60 votes needed to be able to pass through the House. The legislation before the Senate marks the third such continuing resolution for the current fiscal year, now nearly half over. So they're supposed to do it every fiscal year. And the fiscal year for the federal government starts October 1st. And they've haven't passed a budget all year since last October. And so they're now looking at yet another CR. So the current legislation would fund the federal government through the end of September. So essentially through the rest of the fiscal year. So we'd get through all of fiscal year 2025 without ever having a budget passed. It's going to be continuing resolution after continuing resolution. But the current CR would trim non-defense spending by about $13 billion from the previous year and increase defense spending by about $6 billion, which are marginal changes when you're really thinking about our total budget, which is $1.7 trillion, that's with a T, dollars. So that's $1,700 billion, $1,700 billion, if to put it in perspective. And this only trims $13 billion. So, if you had $1,700, if you had a $1,700 budget, for instance, and actually you're spending $1,700, you really only have a budget of about, you know, $1,500, if maybe less. And this, all that does is save $13. Put it in perspective for you. How small the continuing resolution does to actually change any kind of spending levels. That's because it's not designed to change spending levels. It's designed just to continue on with the previous budget. So, like I said, it's not there to be able to cut funding, because if you want to cut spending, Well, then you need to pass a budget. And the Republicans are now saying, because they can't get anything passed through the Senate, we're just going to punt the ball yet again until we have another showdown in September for another actual budget. But again, a CR is not going to be good enough at that point. They have to pass an actual budget for the country to get through. And that means the Republicans have to do two things. One of two things. One is they can try to work with Democrats or try to get eight Democrats on their side. If they can try to convince eight Democrats to do that, then they can pass a bill pretty, not with ease, but they can at least get a bill passed if they can get eight Democrats. However, Democrats, even getting eight, is a very high hurdle. Because the parties now are becoming so far separate in their ideologies. There's almost nothing they can really agree on budget-wise. Because you have one that wants to spend a lot of money, and you have one that wants to cut a lot of money. And there's not a whole lot of, even the money they want to spend, there is not a whole lot of common ground. Again, especially when you talk about funding for Ukraine and all these other things, and Israel, and the foreign stuff, and then domestically, if Trump wants to build up the border and protect the border, and the Democrats don't want to fund that. I mean, the ideologies are just so far apart. One wants to get rid of the Department of Education, for instance. I mean, their ideology is so far apart. It's almost like, could they ever get agreement on a budget? And then, if that's the case, then it's really the nuclear option. And the nuclear option, which is Democrats have done it before, which is lowering the limit of filibuster from 60 votes to pass through filibuster to a simple majority of 50. And then you wouldn't need any Democrats, and you could just force a bill through. Now, thing is, once you take away a filibuster, it's taken away from that Congress. And so if you lose the next time, it could be the situation where they could reverse it on you. So typically, it's not the best idea to be taking away procedural protections because you're not always the party in the majority. Eventually, you're the party in the minority. However, that being said, if it's starting getting to the point where there can never be an agreement, well, the country has to move on. And sometimes drastic measures must be taken. So those are things to consider, but they have to actually get a passed budget. So the Republican-led House passed the current CR on Tuesday and then adjourned afterwards. The move left senators with a decision to either take it or leave it. And while Democrats have been pushing for a vote on a fourth short-term extension, GOP leadership made it clear that option was a non-starter. So essentially what the Democrats wanted was a CR to only get through April. And the Republicans said they're not going to be voting on that. That is just not what they're going to do. So Senate Majority Leader John Thune, who's a Republican from South Dakota, and others used their floor time yesterday to make the case that any blame for a shutdown would fall squarely on Democrats. Thune said when opening the chamber, quote, "Democrats need to decide if they're going to support funding legislation that came over from the House or if they're going to shut down the government." Again, pretty much using the exact same lines that Democrats have used in the past against Republicans. I mean, like I said, it's like rehashing the same story. When I say it's rehashing the same story, it's almost literally line for line rehashing the same story. Just change the parties around. It's trying to, just who's going to try to blame the government shutdown on who. So progressive groups, which have been the bane of the Democrats for a minute now, have urged Democrat lawmakers to insist on the 30-day extension and oppose the spending bill, saying business as usual must not continue while Trump and Elon Musk disable critical agencies and programs, according to them. But Schumer said Trump would seize more power during a shutdown because it would give the administration the ability to deem whole agencies, programs, and personnel non-essential, furloughing staff with no promise they would ever be rehired. So I think Schumer's right there. So, Schumer's an idiot in a lot of ways, right? But he at least has a little bit of intelligence when it comes to this. He sees that this is going to be exactly what Donald Trump wants. You are handing him, essentially something on a silver platter, right? That he wants to lay off federal employees. Man, what easier way to do that than if there is a government shutdown? That gives him the best reason ever to be able to do that. And like he said, never offer them a job again. He's like, hey, look, sorry. We're going to call this whole thing non-essential. Department of Education, non-essential. You get $0, right? I think Donald Trump would very much say that Department of Education is non-essential. And so I think Chuck Schumer's right there in that this would be a great win for Donald Trump, which is why, honestly, the Republicans maybe could use that to their advantage. Instead of passing the CR, I mean, they're kind of doing it, right? They're doing a not quite a strong arm, but, kind of a stronger arm than they usually do in trying to force the CR. That's why they're trying to say, hey, we're not going to even consider a 30-day mark because, again, a government shutdown doesn't go against what Donald Trump wants to do. So, honestly, the best thing is I think this is that's the card that the Republicans use to force 9 Democrats to vote for an actual budget, right? Go one step further, Republicans, right? Use that leverage. Use the leverage that they're so afraid of Donald Trump and what he can do. Use that leverage to get an actual budget passed. Because it's like this, hey, what's a win-win situation for us either way? You want to pass a budget, then we get a budget passed, right? That's good, and that's going to be good for everybody. You don't want to get a budget passed, then that's fine too. We're just going to cut whole departments because government shutdown, right? So it's a like you said a really good win-win situation for Donald Trump, and I think the Republicans, like you said, have a unique opportunity to be able to press that a little bit further. They're trying it a little bit here by trying to say, hey, we're going to do a CR all the way to the end of the fiscal year. But they could probably push it even further. So Democrats have been critical of the funding levels in the current CR. They note that both defense and non-defense spending is lower than what was agreed to nearly 2 years ago when Congress passed legislation lifting the debt ceiling and return for spending restraints. But they're even more worried about the discretion the bill gives the Trump administration on spending decisions. Many Democrats are referring to the measure as a blank check for Trump. Spending bills typically come with specific funding directives for key programs, but hundreds of those directives fall away under the continuing resolution passed by the House. So the administration will have more leeway to decide where the money goes. For example, a Democratic memo, and again, this is take it with a grain of salt because it comes from a Democratic memo, but it said that the bill would allow the administration to steer money away from combating fentanyl and instead use it on mass deportation initiatives. All the Army Corps of Engineers funding levels for more than 1,000 projects would be determined by the administration rather than Congress. So again, it leaves them with a little bit more discretion. Again, the thing is, it doesn't really cut spending. But like I said, the difference, that you could see, right, with the CR is that it doesn't cut spending, but it gives more discretion to the Trump administration in how to spend or not spend the money, right? So the funding is there, but with the CR, there's no directive that Trump has to spend the money, right? He can just not spend it, and try to save the government money that way. So it's in effect, try to get it's almost like a pseudo budget. Not as good as a budget. We need an actual budget, right? Since it's, again, been 2 years since an actual budget. And we don't need to be, we don't need to be lifting debt ceilings again. And when we get to that in October, but, it at least gives something, a little bit of something for Trump to have more leeway in certain areas. Democrats also object to the treatment of the District of Columbia, so D.C., as the bill effectively repeals its current year budget and forces it to go back to their prior year's levels. And Mayor Muriel Bowser, who is a big-time idiot, she said the district would have to cut spending by $1.1 billion over just a few months, which, honestly, is probably a good thing. Because their spending is, what they spend their money on, the city, the actual city of D.C., is crazy, right? They finally took down the Black Lives Matter mural. I mean, it's been up for this how many years? It's been this painted Black Lives Matter yellow on the road. They finally get rid of that. The amount of government waste in D.C. is, because again, they get their money federally. So they can do whatever they want. So $1.1 billion is probably not even enough for that regard. Democrats are also objecting to the clawing back of $20 billion in special IRS funding on top of the $20 billion rescission approved the year before. The change essentially cut in half the funding boost that Congress intended to give the agency through legislation passed during Joe Biden's administration. If you can remember, the hiring of thousands of IRS agents that they wanted to do, well, this starts to claw that back. Of course, it's always it's pretty hard to convince the American people that a larger IRS is better. That is a, from a political standpoint, I think most Americans be like, I think the less money they give the IRS, the better. I think what most Americans would tell you, or would believe. So this spending bill, I should also mention, is separate from the GOP effort to extend tax cuts for individuals passed in Trump's first term, and to pay for those spending cuts elsewhere in the budget. And that's a pretty big spending cut. And that's the spending cut even Democrats have come under and come to support, because that was the one that pretty much doubled. It was a lot of stuff in it. But the big part for most Americans, and it affects most Americans, right, to a benefit of most Americans, which was doubling the standard deduction. You probably remember that when he did it, and it's continued on. And that is a great way. I mean, essentially, it cuts your, for especially people who don't make a lot of money, could cut their income in half, their taxable income in half for a lot of people, right, or more. So that was a really big boon to the country and able to do those tax cuts. And the Democrats, Kamala Harris even campaigned on keeping those tax cuts. Those were generally considered to be good tax cuts for the American people. But again, like with any tax cut, you got to pay for it. They got to figure out a way to do that. Of course, Trump has talked about other tax cuts like no tax on tips, which he has promised. He promised during his campaign, but that can only be done. That can't be done through a CR. That has to be done through legislation. So Republicans, like I said, they only have 2 years. I've said this before. They got 2 years, and they're going to waste a year already with this CR. That's almost a whole year gone. And they didn't get a budget passed, so they've essentially halved their time to try to help Trump pass his promises. And one of the big ones he promised was no tax on tips, and what they want to do politically, because you want to delay it until. You want to delay it until Congress, until it gets closer to the election, right? They have to run for election every 2 years in the House. So it's like, okay, let's wait until the second year, to pass no tax on tips, so it looks good for us politically. That could be something they're considering. But again, they've already lost 1 year. So that means they only got one fiscal year to work with for a new budget before the next election. And if the Republicans can't pass a budget for that second year in October, come October, which is going to be a huge fight, we already know, then that's going to be a great thing for the Democrats to attack them, right? They're in power, they have the presidency, and they cannot work with the other side, and they can't get a budget passed. This is just a great example of the Republicans failing to govern. That's what they're going to say, right? And they'll say, look, we know how to govern, right? We've been in power more than they have, and at least things got done It was very bad things, but they'll at least be able to, they can at least try to argue that, right? Whereas the Republicans get in and it's nothing after nothing after nothing as far as their promises. Now, that's a pretty hard thing to try to say, because Donald Trump has done everything in the power that he has as president to try to get every promise that he had finished. I mean, he has worked tirelessly for that. We talk about it here all the time, how busy he has been trying to meet all the promises he made, almost like he tried to meet every single promise in the first month, right? That's how fast he had done it. But he can't do everything himself, and that's something I mentioned. We do have a separation of powers in this country for a good reason. And so the Republicans also have that majority. And so unless they want to lose that majority, they better help Trump pass those promises. So Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, a Republican from Arkansas, said the Democrat arguments that they're making were hypothetical because they were essentially calling for shutting down the government to protect the government. He said Democrats are fighting to withhold the paycheck of air traffic controllers, our troops, federal custodial staff, and they can't be serious. Again, that's just they always try to throw that up there. You know, they're trying to hold back the money from the military. They're trying to hold, I mean, it's the, you know, he's using again the same line that the Democrats use when they try to blame the shutdown on someone. But things have to move. The CR, okay, it gets us till October 1st. But they need to be. That needs to be a big priority of the Senate. I mean, of the House and the Senate is creating a budget that can either pass with 8 Democrat votes, or, like I said, consider the second option of getting rid of the filibuster for the budget. Just putting that out there, because the American people will only blame the minority party for so long before they blame the majority party to say, "Hey, you had the presidency, the House, and the Senate. What's up?" Right, they don't see the fact that we have to have 8 Democrats in it. Right, they don't really see the filibuster rule. They just see that you're in power, and you got to get something done. Okay, we're gonna take a next break right here. Like always, if you want to call in during the break, number 601-879-0002. Keep it tuned to the full story on WYAB 103.9. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back here to the full story on WYAB 103.9. And one thing about this is not directly related to it's tangentially related to Ukraine and Russia. But one thing that we've talked about is why America gets to direct what happens in Ukraine is because the other powers in Europe do not defend themselves. They have relied so long on America to be able to do their defense for them. And meanwhile, their economies have flourished because they haven't had to spend or use their own workforce to be able to fill their militaries. And that's becoming painfully obvious. So in the year after Russia launched outright war on Ukraine, NATO leaders approved a set of military plans designed to repel an invasion of Europe. It was the biggest shakeup of the alliance's defense readiness preparation since the Cold War. The secret plans set out how Western allies would defend NATO territory from the Atlantic to the Arctic, through the Baltic region and Central Europe, down to the Mediterranean Sea. And according to the plan, up to 300,000 troops would move to its eastern flank within 30 days, with almost all of those 300,000 troops being American. And that would climb to 800,000 troops within 6 months. However, the Trump administration warned last month that U.S. priorities lie elsewhere, and that Europe must take care of its own security. And those goals now seem questionable, since mustering just 30,000 troops to police any future peace in Ukraine is proving a challenge. This is how much they've relied on the United States for their whole defense, right? So billions of euros are being shifted to military budgets, but only slowly. And the Europeans are struggling to fire up production and their defense industries. Before funding, tens of thousands more European citizens might have to complete military service, and time is of the essence. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte has warned that Russian forces could be capable of launching an attack on European territory by 2030. Concerned about Russia's intentions, Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk wants to introduce large-scale military training for every adult male and double the size of Poland's army to around 500,000 soldiers, he said. But the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute estimates that all of Europe, including the UK, has about 1.5 million active duty personnel, but many can't be deployed on a battlefield, and those who can are hard to use effectively without a centralized command system. And to put that in perspective, just the number of Russian troops in Ukraine, according to some estimates, is 700,000. And that's just what they have in Ukraine. That's not including what they have in all other places in Europe and other places in the world, right? And this is also why I talk about why Russia has never been defeated, because they have such large numbers. Is not that they're great fighters, but they can put up a large amount of people, some that Europe has always had a trouble matching. Analysts say that in the event of a Russian attack, NATO's top military officer, which is an American, would deploy probably around 200,000 U.S. troops to Europe to build on the 100,000 U.S. military personnel already there. So again, using our people, our sons and daughters, to defend them. And they're not putting money, and they haven't been putting money in their defense or using their own people. They want to rely on your son or your daughter to defend them. Again, while their economy flourishes, and we got it because we got it, they don't have to spend money on it. They don't have to use their men and women to fill out their military. They expect us to do that. They expect us to be their military, and that's what they've been doing for so long. And that's what Donald Trump wants to get away from. Now, with the Americans out of the picture, a realistic estimate may therefore be that an increase in European capacities, equivalent to the fighting capacity of 300,000 U.S. troops, is needed, according to the Brussels-based Bruegel think tank. It says Europe faces a choice: either increase troop numbers significantly by more than 300,000 to make up for the fractured nature of national militaries, or find ways to rapidly enhance military coordination. But the question is how. So NATO is encouraging countries to build up personnel numbers, but the Transatlantic Alliance isn't telling them how to do it. Maintaining public support for the armed forces and for Ukraine is too important to risk by dictating choices, they say. The way they go about it is intensely political, so we wouldn't prescribe any way of changing this, whether to go for conscription, elective conscription, bigger reserves, according to a senior NATO official. Well, they'd really absolutely need conscription or a draft to fill out the numbers, because they're so used to not having to do it. They're so used to not having to spend money in the military. And again, part of NATO is they have to do it, and they haven't been doing it. And they've just been living in peaceful bliss and expecting America to do it. And then now, finally, America's saying, you know what? Maybe not. Maybe this is not the best thing for our sons and daughters to die for the protection of your country. And when you're not being able to put it up. Again, don't get me wrong, right? Allies are important. And if an ally is attacked, I'm not completely against supporting them. But they have to have the major effort. It shouldn't be us sending 200,000 people and they spend 10,000, right? That's not how that works. That's not how an ally works. That's us being your mercenary for you. That's what that is. That's not us helping you. That is us completely being your army and expecting us to defend you. That is not the purpose of NATO. But that's not the original purpose of NATO, I should say. But that is what it has devolved into. And again, you know, you always got to plan for attacks, right? And this is hypothetical. We always deal in hypothetical situations in the military. And hypothetically, if Russia were to invade any parts of Russia, any parts of Europe, they just don't have the numbers to be able to repel that attack. And they just don't have it. And that is a failure on them. They need to be able to prepare for that. And they need to think about it without military leadership, right? Or without military, without American assistance. It'd be nice to have American assistance, right? But you need a plan in case that doesn't happen. And they don't have the military or the funding right now to do it. And now they want to say they want to give Ukraine security guarantees with what people and with what army, right? You and what army? That's the question. And the answer is, yeah, you're right. I don't have one. Or at least don't have a whole lot of one. And it's like, oh, America's got it. It's like, America's, nope, no, we're not anymore. That's going to be on you, my friend. All right, we have to take our last break right here. When we get back, we'll do This Day in History. But keep it tuned to the full story on WYAB 103.9. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back here to the full story on WYAB 103.9 as we get to This Day in History. So on this day, March 14th, 1794, was the day Eli Whitney patented the cotton gin. So before the cotton gin, removing seeds from cotton was a slow, tedious, and back-breaking work, as a single worker could process only about a pound of cotton per day. But Eli Whitney's invention changed everything. The cotton gin, short for cotton engine, used a simple but effective mechanism, which was wire teeth on a rotating drum pulled the soft cotton fibers through a mesh screen, separating them from the seeds in seconds. The resulting effect of this was a cotton boom like never seen before. Suddenly, cotton became the dominant crop of the South, feeding the rapidly growing textile mills of the North and Europe. It transformed the U.S. economy, making cotton America's most valuable export. Whitney, ironically, never profited from his invention, as farmers quickly copied his design and patent enforcement was nearly impossible. But his impact on history didn't stop there, as he later revolutionized firearm production with the concept of interchangeable parts, laying the foundation for modern mass manufacturing. And so he was quite ahead of his time in many different ways. All right, that's all I have for you guys today. Have a great weekend. Stay safe from the storms. But until I see you on Monday, my name is Matthew Bishop, and you have heard the full story.
Bye. 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 Baby, bye.